Hey, Cliff Goldstein here, and a number of years ago, somebody had asked me the cliche question. We've all heard it. If a tree falls in a forest and no one's there to hear it, does it make any noise? And my answer was, well, of course it makes noise. How stupid of a question. It makes noise. I don't have to have anybody here to hear it for it to make noise. But you know, if you were to ask me the question now, if a tree falls in a forest and no one's there to hear it, does it make noise? I would be adamant that no, it doesn't make noise. And I believe the implications of the fact that it doesn't make noise, I think are very important in helping free our minds. We who've been raised in the shadow of the Enlightenment, we who've been raised in the scientific realm and with science, I think the implications could help free us from some of the intellectual bigotry and narrow-mindedness and close-mindedness that a scientific worldview has imposed on a lot of us. So, now, let's go back to our forest, where the tree falls and no one's there to hear it. Does it make noise? Well, suppose in that forest, when the tree fell, there were only deaf people. Would the tree make noise? Or suppose on the whole planet, where everybody on the planet was deaf and the tree fell, would it make noise? Suppose in the whole universe there was no being at all with an ear to hear. Would the tree make noise? Now, it would still vibrate molecules of air, of course. There's no question about that. But vibrating molecules of air without a functioning ear to hear it can no more make noise than a bowl of sugar without a mouth is sweet. Because just as the sound's not in the air, the sound's in the ear. In the same way, the sweetness isn't in a bowl of sugar. The sweetness is in your mouth. Now, you don't believe me on that? Let's try a little thought experiment here. Scientists talk about thought experiments, things that they really can't do in a lab, so they just think it up. This one, if you don't really believe me, you could go home and test it yourself, but I don't think you're going to need to. I mean, suppose you go home and you got a bowl of sugar on your desk or on your table. Okay, there's a bowl of sugar. You can stick your finger in the bowl of sugar. You could stick your foot in the bowl of sugar. You can put it on your head, and it might be crunchy, it might be grainy, it will be hard, but I guarantee you it won't be sweet because the sweetness is not in the sugar. The sweetness is in your mouth. Now, this isn't anything new. I mean, man, 2,300 years ago, 2,300 years ago, Plato. The philosopher Plato said something to the effect of, nothing can become sweet which is sweet to no one. In other words, he's saying the sweetness isn't in the thing, the sweetness exists in your mouth. Now, it's the same thing with hot and cold. Hot and cold, where does hot and cold exist? Let's try another experiment. Say you got somebody in a freezer. Some guy's in a freezer at, 10 degrees below zero at Fahrenheit. I got to use Fahrenheit. I can't make any heads or tails of this Celsius or this metric stuff. It doesn't make any sense to me. Fahrenheit. He's in a freezer, 10 degrees below freezing. Okay? And then there's a guy in a sauna right next to him that's 110 degrees Fahrenheit. Okay? So one guy's in a freezer, one guy's in a sauna. Okay? Now, they come out of the sauna. Outside of it's a bucket of water. Say the bucket of water is, 40 degrees. Okay, now the guy comes out of the freezer, puts his hand, and the guy comes out of the sauna. The guy that comes out of the sauna puts his hand in the bucket of water and says, "Woo, that's cold." The other guy comes out of the freezer and puts his hand in the same bucket of water and says, "That's hot." Is it hot or is it cold? No, it's 40 degrees. The hot or cold doesn't exist in the bucket of water. The hot and cold exists in the human, in our body. It doesn't exist apart outside of us. Degrees and temperature does, but that's not the same as hot and cold. Okay, now what about light? Surely, light, you don't need a human being for there to be light. Well, you know, I mean, if the sun shines on a planet, and they're only deaf people, and they're only blind people on the planet. Is there light and is there color? Is there light and is there color? Now, the light and color, there is electromagnetic waves. There's electromagnetism. There's waves of light and photon and so on. But they light and color aren't there because they don't exist independent of us. There's photons, but you need an eye to convert those photons and turn into your brain to turn it into light and color. Otherwise, they don't exist. So all these things, what I'm talking about, vibrating molecules of air, they exist independent of us. You know, sugar exists independent of us. Light exists, or photons exist independent of us. Of course they do. I'm not denying that these things don't exist out there. They exist out there. In fact, I'm saying specifically that they exist. What I'm saying is that they exist out there as just those things, as photons, as vibrating molecules of air. And it's only when they come in contact with us as human beings with the kind of receptors, the specific receptors that we have, do they become things like sound and light and taste and touch as we experience them. Apart from us, these things, sound, taste, touch, don't exist. Hot, cold, sound, taste, these are things that are really created by our minds, and how our minds filter these physical phenomena that are out there. Our senses give us a very specific view of the world, and even more important, a very limited view of the world. And don't miss my emphasis on the word limited. We get a very, very limited view of the world with the sense perceptors that we have. I mean, think about it for a minute, too. Suppose instead of two eyes, suppose we had 100 eyes. And suppose we had these eyes all over our body. How different would reality seem? Would it appear to us? It's the same world out there. Nothing changes in the world. The world is exactly the same. But how different would it appear to us if instead of two eyes, we had 50 or 100 eyes? Okay? Or suppose those eyes, too. Suppose, you know, we could see a very narrow, they say, electromagnetic band of light, of electromagnetic wave of light. I don't know how it all works. It's a narrow band. Suppose our eyes were able to see whole realms of electromagnetic waves that we can't see now. How different would the world appear to us? Again, it's the same world. Nothing changes out there. The world is exactly the same as it was whether, no matter how many eyes we had. But it would appear radically, radically different to us if our eyesight were different than it is. Suppose we could hear things. Suppose we could hear things that we can't hear now. Suppose you could hear, you know, the molecules and atoms or the whiz of the electrons and so on. I mean, again, the reality stays exactly the same. What's out there stays the same, but it's our senses which allow us to perceive it. And if our senses were different, reality would seem so different. Or suppose you could smell differently. You smell, you know, I got this dog. I have this 80-pound shepherd Akita, great big beast, thing scared of its own shadow. And yet I remember one morning I put the dog, let the dog go out on the porch. And this 80-pound mutt, she gets out on the porch. First thing she does in the morning is she puts her snout up in the air. And she's just, and she's smelling. And she's, I can stick even this big snout of mine up in the air. Smell, and I'm not going to smell much, but the dog has got that snout up in the air, and she's smelling, so she's perceiving a whole aspect of reality, a whole thing that I'm not aware of. It's there, and it's real, but I don't have access to it. Now, if we had different senses, if our senses and our sense receptors were different, we would have a whole radically different conception. conception of reality. I'm not saying our senses would make reality different. I'm saying the total opposite. Reality's reality, regardless of our senses. What I'm saying is our conception of it, the way the world comes into us, would be radically different if our sense perceptors were radically different than they are. But they just happen to be a certain way, so we perceive whatever it is out there through this very narrow tunnel of the sense receptors that we have. You know, it was many years ago, it was a British philosopher. His name was Francis Bacon. And Bacon said something, and I want to read you what Bacon said, because it's a very good point. Francis Bacon, kind of an interesting guy, went off to Cambridge or something when he was a youngster and just basically said he was going to throw out all the knowledge that he was taught, and he didn't believe any of it. He was going to start on his own. And some people actually credit Francis Bacon with being one of the early founders and thinking of ultimately led to the, you know, the Enlightenment and the scientific revolution. But listen to what he said. He said, the human understanding is like an uneven mirror receiving rays from things and merging its own nature with the nature of things, which thus distorts and corrupts it. Interesting. We merge whatever comes in with what's inside us, and according to Bacon, it distorts and corrupts it. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. See, our minds, this is the point. Our minds, the way our minds are created, the way our brains are wired, the way our perceptors are, that these things create the reality that we as human beings know. And it comes in a very narrow, very selective, very subjective way. Again, another reality exists out there, independent of our receptors. Okay, independent of us. But we can know that reality. Whatever it is, we can know it only through the narrow way our minds allow us to know it. I mean, who knows what's really out there? I mean, you ever wonder what's really, really out there? You know, how much out there is right there, right in front of us? Things are right there in front of us, yet they remain completely inaccessible to us because we don't have the perceptors or the receptors to pick it up. What do I mean? Well, first of all, this isn't new stuff. This isn't new. This goes back the ancient Greeks thousands of years ago. Plato, with his metaphor of the cave, he said that we are like human beings are like creek beings who were born with their faces chained to a wall of a cave. And you're chained to a wall of a cave, and all you see, and behind you there's like a fire or there's the sun, and there's shadows. And these shadows are on the wall of the cave. And all you've ever seen your whole life are these shadows on the cave. And that's your view of reality. You've never been able to turn your head and look behind you. All you've ever known are these shadows on the wall of a cave. And according to Plato, that's how the world as it appears to us, that's how the world appears to us, when in reality, there's a whole world out there that's going on behind us, but we can't see it. So even thousands and thousands of years ago, people understood this idea. The famous Jewish writer Moses Maimonides, in the 1200s, in his Moses, The Guide for the Perplexed, interesting book. If you were perplexed before you started, I guarantee you'll be more perplexed after you get done reading it. But he said, know that for the human mind, there are certain objects of perception which are within the scope of its nature and capacity. On the other hand, there are among things which actually exist certain objects which the mind can in no way and by no means grasp. The gates of perception are closed against it. So even back then, they were saying that we can't know reality, you know, the way it really is. Our mind only allows us. And then, of course, in the 18th century, the famous philosopher Immanuel Kant, he divided reality. He says, look, there's the world as it really is, and there's the world as it just appears to us. What is the difference? I mean, you know, this book, you know, it feels solid. It's empty space. We all know atomic theory. All hard objects, they're empty space. You know how it is. You know, you got the atomic model. I mean, you've got like the way they say it's like a grain of sand It's like a grain of sand in the middle of the Westminster Abbey. That's the that's the nucleus, and the electrons floating around it, it would be on the edge of the Westminster Abbey. Those are the electrons. That's what reality is like. But we don't see it that way because it appears to us only the way our senses allow it to appear to us. So these aren't new ideas. And, think about it for a minute. How much reality? I want to ask you this question. How much reality exists all around you right now that you have no idea about, that you can't pick up? A reality just as real as my voice is to you right now, but you're totally oblivious to you. Let me give you an example. I don't know where you are right now. I don't know where you are or where you're listening to me from. But chances are right now that there are millions and millions of cell phone calls that are right in the air, right around you, right now, just as real as my voice. Those cell phone calls are there. Or there's other radio signals, satellite signals, TV signals, things that are just as real as my voice. Or as real as the person sitting next to you, or as real as your own breath. Yet you perceive none of it. You perceive none of it because our bodies don't have the apparatus that allow us to pick these things out of the air the same way you can pick my voice out of the air. If our eyes and ears were somehow wired, say like cell phones or TV receptors, then you would pick these things up out of the air just as readily and as easily as you pick up my voice, yet they're just as real, just as true, just as much a part of reality as anything in the room, anything you could touch, feel, taste, or sense. And yet, it's just that the way we're wired, the way we're put together, they remain inaccessible to us. So again, it's because we are wired to pick up reality just a certain way. If you didn't have your satellite dish or your TV dish or whatever you're picking this up on, then you wouldn't know it's there. You wouldn't know. If you didn't have that, you wouldn't know that I was still in the room right there with you, whispering in your ear whether you heard it or not, because you didn't have the receptors to pick it up. And so I guess where I'm trying to go with all this, because there is a point that I am trying to pull out of all this, as I ask, is if you ever stop and think of how many other aspects of reality there could be, things that are just as real as the things your senses pick up, other aspects of reality that completely go by you, that you're completely oblivious to. Not because they're not there. They're there. They're real. They're as real as anything that, you know, you're hearing right now. Yet you don't have the wires. You don't have the receptors to pick them up. You know, I don't know if any of you, that Bruce Willis in that movie Sixth Sense, where he had some kid was able to see the dead. Now, please, I don't believe the ghosts or anything like that. I believe that's all nonsense. But he had receptors that somehow nobody else had. And, you know, again, putting aside all the nonsense about seeing the dead, it was the point that the kid was able to perceive a reality that the rest of the other people weren't able to pick up, something that at least in the movie was real. I mean, if I had a magnet in here right now, and I would use the magnet, it would lift things up. It's pulling things together, you know, and so on, the way magnets work. There's a force there. That's a real force, as real as my voice, as real as the light here. And yet, we're totally oblivious to it because we don't have the senses to see it. Doesn't mean, though, it's not real. You know, I often sometimes thought that reality, sometimes I think it's like this vast Euclidean plane. There's this plane, and we as human beings, we intercept the plane, given our eyes, our ears, our nose, our few tactile, the few senses we have. We intersect the plane, and with our few senses that we have, we interact with it just in that small point, and yet there's a whole other reality out there that we're totally oblivious to. Again, not because it doesn't exist, but simply because we don't have the receptors to pick them up. You know, it's interesting, too, though, because, you know, the Bible does say something about this. Scripture does give a little indication on this. And I just want to read you something from the book of Hebrews. And this goes, you know, we're talking a long time ago. The book of Hebrews. Now, just think for a minute. Just think for a moment about what's in the context of some of the things I'm saying, that we're wired to pick up reality in just a certain way. There are just certain aspects that we can pick up, and yet there's whole other things that are just beyond our senses. And listen to what's here in Hebrews 11. It says, now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of what? Of things not seen. Things not seen. And then it goes on to say, through faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that things which are seen were not made of things which do appear. In other words, they were not made of things which do appear. So the things which do appear weren't the things in which the world was made out of. So we can't see. They're not accessible to us because we can't see them. And yet how much easier, I think, for us today, living in the world where we know there are radio waves, we know there are gamma rays and X-rays and all these other things going on that exist, that are totally outside the realm of our senses. We of any generation should be aware more of the fact that we do get a very limited view of the world. You know, there was a famous philosopher, actually one of my favorite atheist philosopher, Bertrand Russell. I read a lot of Bertrand Russell. I mean, I agree with him, obviously I don't, but Bertrand Russell once said, what science cannot tell us, mankind cannot know. And what a narrow view of the world. What science cannot tell us, mankind cannot know. Oh, come on, Bertie, you could have done better than that. You see, folks, we are heirs of the Enlightenment. We're heirs of the Greek scientific legacy. And that's fine. And to a degree, hey, science has done a lot of good things for us. But in a sense, science and this whole idea has locked our minds in this idea of, oh, you got to be able to sense it. You got to be able to explain it. You got to be able to feel it, touch it, put it in a lab, analyze it, you know, and take something, some specimen, pickle it and whatever they pickle it in and examine it and take it apart in a million different pieces and they're studying life. That's how they're studying life, and that's how you come to know truth. And I believe that reality is greater than what we can put in test tubes, greater than what we can see or taste or touch or feel. You know, I've got a quote here, and I'm from another philosopher, another Brit. His name is Simon Blackburn. And I just started getting to reading him lately, and I like him very much. And listen to what he's saying. Listen to what this British philosopher is saying. Because I think it's important for us. We should, however, remember a long tradition in philosophy of calling things fictions without disrespect. Matter, force, energy, causes, laws of nature, space, time, possibilities, numbers, infinity, cells, freedom of the will itself, desires, belief, identity, things, propriety, science, language, money. In fact, everything you can think of has at some time or another been declared to be a fiction by philosophers bent on keeping a firm check on reality. And I think his point is very well made. We've come out of this whole scientific milieu where, you know, you've got to be able to explain it, you've got to be able to parse it and break it down and put it in a test tube, or it's not true, it's not real, and it, you know, it doesn't work. And, you know, and I think it's too bad, because I think we all, in a sense there's a greater reality out there. There's something beyond what just our limited senses can tell us. You know, maybe he should have added to that, people, of all the things they've thrown out too, maybe the idea of God or the supernatural gets thrown out as well. You see, we've got our senses, and they give us a view of the world, but it's just a very, very narrow view of the way things are. I mean, think about, suppose you were colorblind. Suppose everybody in the world were colorblind. Does that mean red and green and blue and yellow don't exist? Well, something exists out there. Something exists out there that if you put it, you know, light on it at a certain angle, if you've got beings with certain cones and receptors in their eyes and the way their minds are wired, it'll look red, green, blue, whatever. But without us there, without us perceiving it and filtering it through our minds, it's not red, it's not green, it's not blue. But maybe our minds would have been wired in a way they'd come in a different way, look to us differently. And I guess the point I'm trying to make on all this is, as I said, we have been geared and raised and educated in this era of science and how science works, and as it does a lot of things. But I think someone once said how they thought how science and philosophy once could clip an angel's wings. And I would just appeal that we not be so narrow-minded. We not be so close-minded. We not be so parochial and so locked into our time that we say, well, you know, we can't, you know, everybody today believes if it doesn't exist, or I mean, if you can't put it in a test tube, or you can't explain it in a lab, or science doesn't tell us this thing, then we can't believe it, it's not there. You know, the world existed for many years without all our test tubes and all those things that, you know, mean so much today. And it's very hard for us to step out of ourselves, to get a bigger view. I think it was Günter Grass, a German writer, who once said that he knows only what he can see, touch, taste, and feel. And I feel real sorry for him, because if that's all he knows, then there's so much more of reality out there that he's going to miss.